WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. With the 1961 book Mastering the Art of French Cooking, Julia Child helped introduce Americans to classic French cuisine. In 1963, she started her long-running TV series The French Chef and became one of America's most celebrated cooks. Child's seventh book is called The Way to Cook. She addresses herself to the new generation of cooks who didn't grow up in the old traditions. Child told me that attitudes about food have changed since the 1960s when her first book came out.
Well, they've changed enormously. In the 1960s, you could eat anything you wanted, and of course people were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things, and there was no talk about fat and anything like that. And butter and cream were rife. Those were lovely days for gastronomy, I must say. And then along came, in those days too, it was classical French cooking, and you didn't deviate from the rules. But now, and then shortly after that, we got, in the 1970s, we got Nouvelle Cuisine, in which a lot of the old rules were kicked over. And then we had Cuisine Minceur, which people mixed up with Nouvelle Cuisine, but was actually fancy diet cooking. Then we went into the organic phrase, where we had bean sprouts and tofu, to a large extent. And now we're in a kind of a fright situation where people are very much afraid of fats and oils, and cholesterol has reared its ugly head.
Are you afraid of cholesterol?
I think cholesterol has become such a trendy word now that I think a lot of people really don't know what it's all about, but they just know that they're afraid and they're eating oat bran and getting diarrhea. Or some people are. So I hope we're going to get out of the silly season and get back into some good sense, because you're supposed to have a certain amount of fat. 25 to 30% of your calories should be fat or oil, because you need to process your vitamins, and if you don't have enough fat, they won't do you any good.
Well, have you cut down, though, on the desserts and sauces?
Well, I have always tried to eat sensibly, mm-hmm. and I think the good word is moderation in all things and a little bit of everything. And I would be a Mrs. Six by Six if I ate all that I like, so that I've been pretty sensible and I've been watching my weight, because mainly for cosmetic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I have all our main recipes are mostly very low in fat and calories, and then you can add what you want. But it's written for mature people who know what they're doing. And as most people say nowadays, that you, for one thing, inheritance is terribly important. You should know what your family background is.
I'm interested about the foods that you grew up eating. Mm. Now, you grew up in Pasadena, California.
I did indeed, and I grew up in the teens and the 20s, when most people had, middle-class people had maids or had someone to help. And we had very sensible New England-type food, because my mother came from New England. Roasts and vegetables and fresh peas and mashed potatoes. But nobody discussed food a great deal, because it just wasn't done. And there was no wine served at the table, at least not in my family, who were very conservative. We always ate very well, but it wasn't talked about.
Well, your family had a cook. Did your mother cook at all, and did you learn
No, she really didn't cook at all. She knew how to make baking powder biscuits and Welch rabbit, and that's all she knew how to make. And I didn't do any cooking then, not at all.
Did you have any interest in cooking?
I was always very hungry, but I never did any cooking at all. And it wasn't until I went over to China in World War II. I was with the OSS, and I just adored that Chinese food. It was so delicious. We were in Kunming and Chongqing. And then there were a lot of sophisticated world travelers whom I met. and food was discussed a great deal. And then after the war, when I married and settled down in Washington, D.C., I began to cook and found that I enjoyed it immensely.
Mm-hmm.
It always took me a very long time. I had Gourmet magazine and The Joy of Cooking. And then we found ourselves in France, and I can remember my first meal there. We had come over on the boat, because that was in 1948, and airplane traffic was not rampant, or it hardly existed. And we had our big old blue Buick on the boat and drove from Le Havre to Rouen. And I remember my first French meal. It was just delicious. Of course, we had wine, which I had not known much about, and oysters on the half shell, and then a beautiful dish of sole and white wine sauce with mushrooms, and I just couldn't get over. I hadn't ever had that kind of food.
Sounds very good. Before we continue about life in France, I want to just back up a little bit and go back to your childhood for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You're over 6 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
so I'm sure you were a very tall girl.
I'm the smallest in my family.
However. Oh, no. were you very athletic, and did you...
Oh, very, uh-huh. Yes. I played tennis and golf and all kinds of things. I was very, very athletic, because one was in California anyway, because you could do outdoor activities.
Were you comfortable with your height, or were you self-conscious about it?
Well, I didn't like dancing school when I was much taller than the boys, but I don't know. I got used to it perfectly easily.
Mm-hmm. Julia Child is my guest, and she has a new cookbook called The Way to Cook. When you graduated from college, you went to New York with the mm-hmm. hopes of becoming a novelist or of writing for a magazine.
Or writing for The New Yorker, or at least getting into Time or Newsweek. Nobody wanted me for some strange reason.
Why did you want to write, and were you sure that you wanted to have a career?
Well, I was. I thought I was romantic about the idea of writing or being on the stage. In those days, too, everyone was fascinated with the theater. But I wanted to do one or the other, and then I got a job at W&J Sloan's furniture store in advertising and publicity, which I enjoyed very much.
Mm-hmm.
And then along came the war, and I got into the... I went down to Washington and eventually got into the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS.
Did you want to be a spy?
I did want to be a spy, and I thought I'd be a very good one, because no one would think that someone as tall as I would possibly be a spy. But, of course, I ended up doing office, menial office work. I was in the files the whole time, which I actually, though, it was fascinating as an organization to be in, and at least I knew everything that was going on.
Did you feel that you were discriminated against because you were a woman, and that's why you were doing
work? Those were in the days before Women's Lib, and women were not expected to do anything but eventually marry and have children and be good wives. I don't know exactly why we went to college, if that's all we were supposed to do. But just nobody thought of having a career except a few people who were doctors, but I don't think there were very, very few people who ever went into law, because you wouldn't get anywhere as a woman.
Well, you were telling us how being in the OSS led you overseas. You lived mm-hmm. for a while in China. I think you lived for a while in India.
Yep, Ceylon. It was Ceylon in China.
Mm-hmm. And then after the war, you telling us you went to Washington, then went back to Paris, mm-hmm. went to Paris and lived there. This was in the late 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
So you had wonderful food in Paris.
It was just marvelous. It was still the old classical cuisine. It was just delicious. I've never had such good food again as we had then.
Well, how did eating wonderful food lead you to want to start preparing wonderful food?
Well, I was very much impressed with the food, and I just had, having started in cooking after we got married, I decided I would go to the Cordon Bleu, and they had kind of a classes for what we call fluffies. What it did at that same time, they were having some classes for the GIs on the Bill of Rights. And I decided after doing a little bit that I would really like to do much more serious delving into cuisine so that I was able to join the GIs. And they didn't object, luckily. And we started in at 7 in the morning and finished at around 11. And then I would rush home and prepare a fancy lunch for my husband, Paul. In those days, too, the American Embassy followed the two-hour lunch, French lunch hour, so we always came home for lunch. And then, but in those days, too, middle-class women were not going into cooking, either the French or the Americans. And the French, of course, all had maids. It was the way we had lived before the war in the USA.
So the other students were mostly chefs?
So nobody, no people that I knew, either French or American, were at all interested in the mechanics of cooking. But then at some party through a mutual friend, I met my colleague Simon Beck, Simka, who was, as I was, tremendously interested in cooking, but she knew a great deal about it. She'd worked with old Henri Pellepas and so forth. And eventually, because we began working together, eventually we started a little cooking school called L'École des Trois Gourmands. And Simka and her friend Louisette were writing a book on French cooking for Americans, and they needed a collaborator. So that's how eventually Volume 1 of Mastering came into being.
Mastering the Art of French
Mastering
Cooking.
Mastering the Art of French Cooking, you know.
Did you see it as a way to introduce Americans to French cuisine?
Yes, I was tremendously interested in French cuisine because it's the only cuisine that has the real rules on how to cook. And I wanted, because I had started in quite late. I was about in my early 30s when I started cooking. And I found that the recipes in all the books I had were really not adequate. They didn't tell you enough. And I'm, for one, I won't do anything unless I'm told why I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt that we needed fuller explanations so that if you followed one of those recipes, it should turn out exactly right. And that's why the recipes are very long, but they have full detail. And my feeling is that once you know everything and have digested it, then it becomes part of you.
When you moved back to the States and you wanted to continue French cooking, were there ingredients that you couldn't find in the States?
No, there were some differences. I think the cream was not as thick, but that was easy enough to make your own, what they called crème fraîche, by adding a little buttermilk or yogurt to heavy cream and making it thick. And in those days, cream was very chic. Nowadays, people are afraid of it. But the flour is different, but you could, because the French, general French flour is softer and more made for pastries. And you can perfectly well duplicate that by using part unbleached all-purpose flour with a little bit of plain bleached cake flour added to it, which softens the gluten content. And, of course, the meat cuts are different, but there were otherwise I didn't find anything too difficult or impossible to do.
What do you think the American attitude was toward French cooking when your book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, came out?
Well, at that point, when Mastering the Art came out, French cooking was very much in vogue because we had the J.F. Kennedys in the White House and they had their wonderful French chef. And at the same time, people were beginning to be able to get easily over to Europe because air flights were available. Before, you had to go by boat and it just took so long that only the upper classes could go over there or people on extended vacations. So suddenly, Europe became available, and Americans were able to go over there and taste the food, and it became very chic, and people were very much interested in it.
You became nationally famous in the United States for your cooking show. I read that your cooking show started because you were a guest on someone else's show when your book Mastering the Art of French Cooking came out, and there was such a big response that they gave you your own show. At that time
when they did a book review, and I had to do something. You can't just talk about it. So I beat up some egg whites in a big copper bowl, that kind of thing that people have not seen before, and I made an omelet. And at that time, there were no cooking shows at all on television. And people said, well, why don't we have a cooking show? And so I did 3 pilots, and they got a lot of response because there weren't any on at that point, and French cooking was very much in vogue. So they said, let's try 13 shows and see how it goes. And at that time, also, public television was mostly talking heads. And they wanted to have something that was a little more lively. And it started in Boston, and then I think Pittsburgh was the first to pick it up, and then San Francisco, and finally New York. And so that's how it really started in.
Julia Child is my guest. Were your early shows live?
No, nothing was live, but the early shows, because we were very, very, very strict budget, it was really live on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we started in, we didn't stop at all, unless there was a terrible disaster, and we only had about 2 or 3, I think.
Tell me one of the terrible disasters.
Well, one time I was blanching some broccoli, and it was in a salad basket, which was lowered into a big kettle, and when I picked it up, my fork slipped, and it all fell on the floor. I didn't pick it up and use it, so we did stop because it was a real mess. But every time we stopped, it would cost, several $100s because it always took half an hour to get back again, and you'd have to pay overtime. And another time, there was a short circuit on my microphone, and every time I touched the stove, the microphone would go, and I'd clutch my breast. So we had to stop for that. But otherwise, we just didn't stop at all. And then people would say, well, I saw you drop that chicken on the floor, which, of course, I never did. All I did was flip a potato pancake into the stove, and then I put it back into the pan, and I said, well, if you're all alone in the kitchen, nobody will know.
But
it's funny that people saw me do that to a chicken. Isn't that funny how people will say that?
So were there often mistakes in the actual show that you would recover from, thinking that, well,
yes,
this kind of thing happens all the time to real cooks?
And I think some people would accuse me of doing things purposely, but anyone who's been in the kitchen knows that awful things happen all the time, and you just, if you're a cook, you have to make do with whatever happens.
An example of something that you made do with on the air?
Well, I think that potato pancake was about it.
Okay.
But then not much terrible happened. But, I was just cooking as one normally would at home, which I think people rather enjoyed because it was informal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the way most people cook at home anyway.
I'm sure you must have seen the Dan Aykroyd Saturday Night Live.
Oh yes, we have a tape of that. That's great fun.
What he'd always do is when he was doing you is take little nips of wine until he got really giddy while he was cooking.
I know, and then people accuse me of that too, which of course I know Frank Pryle of the New York Times said that he saw me pick up a bottle and drink out of it, which of course I would never do in public. But I think his book didn't sell very well, so I don't care. No, I would never. Would be a very gauche thing to do in public, wouldn't it?
Julia Child is my guest. She has a new cookbook, and it's called The Way to Cook. I want to ask you what you think of Nouvelle Cuisine.
Nouvelle Cuisine is through, I think. I think it has been very useful in that it released people from a straitjacket. Then we've gone into silly seasons and so forth. But one thing that was very useful is of paying attention to how the food looks on the plate to make it really attractive. Then I think that gets exaggerated, so something looks like a Japanese flower garden and the food looks fingered, which is not attractive. I think food should look like food, but it should be very appetizingly arranged.
When you say food looks fingered, what do you mean?
I mean, so you'd taking your thumb and sort of wet your thumb and put these little things all around the plate in the shape of petals and so forth. And I don't find that attractive because you know that they have been probably licking their fingers and putting it on the plate.
It was French cooking that got you started as a cook. How much of your time is devoted now to French cuisine?
That's kind of hard to say because what is important to me about French cuisine is the techniques, because they are the techniques of good cooking. It's hard to say when you say French cuisine what that means anymore. It used to mean the school of Escoffier in classical French cooking, but what everybody who has any training at all uses French techniques because those are the bases of good cooking.
One last question. Do you ever have disagreements with your doctor about what an appropriate diet for you is?
Absolutely not, because we use the same system of moderation in all things. A great variety of foods and weight watching, exercise, sensible helpings. But I'm a very good advertisement for my own cooking. I'm 77 years old, work a 10-hour day, six, seven, eight days a week, and I'm just in very good form and health.
Well, I'm really glad to hear it, and I thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, good to talk with you. Bye.
Julia Child's latest book is The Way to Cook. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.